It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In this installment of our series of interviews with Wisconsin candidates for governor, we talk with Maggie Turnbull, the independent candidate. She's running against Libertarian Phil Anderson, Wisconsin Party candidate Arnie Enns, Democrat Tony Evers, Green Party candidate Michael J. White, and Republican incumbent Scott Walker. What's the most important issue that you want the next governor to focus on? And what questions do you have for Maggie Turnbull? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Maggie Turnbull is the independent candidate for governor of Wisconsin. She's also an astronomer, independent contractor, and small business owner. Maggie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
First of all, why do you want to be governor of Wisconsin?
I wanted to see some variety on the ticket this year. I wanted to make sure that we'd have science represented. I wanted to see a woman on the ticket. I could tell how the Democratic primary was going to turn out. This was something I could see way in advance. And I'm actually just tired of the insider network that we see represented over and over again within these two big parties. And, there's just so much money involved in these campaigns. And I want to present something different, just a different way of campaigning and connecting with people. I'm not spending millions of dollars at all. And I think, as someone who's born and raised in Wisconsin and whose whole network is here, I wanted to just give people a chance to vote for something completely different and strive to build up the middle ground in our political landscape, as opposed to just dividing and polarizing us and causing so much stress to the people who live here.
You said in June that the top issue that triggered you to want to run for governor was that you wanted to see someone on the ballot who is a peacemaker. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I really believe that in Wisconsin, we are reasonable people who know how to solve problems together, regardless of our political affiliation. I served on city council for 4 years in Antigo, Wisconsin, and I know what it's like to have to keep things running with a very limited budget and with people of a variety of viewpoints. But at the end of the day, we have to keep the lights on. We have to keep the water running. We have to keep the sewer system working. We have to keep the roads together. So we come together and we get it done. And we treat each other respectfully. And we come up with creative solutions. We work with our staff, who are very intelligent people. And we figure out a way forward together. I want to see that same kind of spirit represented at all levels of government in Wisconsin by electing leaders who don't just use divisional rhetoric to divide us and make people angry, but actually insist that everybody does have a seat at the table and we're not passing legislation unless it has broad support from not just all the legislators, regardless of which party they're in, but also the people that live in their districts. A lot of these legislators were elected with a very slim majority or not even a majority of their electorate, and they're only representing half the people in their own districts. So I want to make sure as leaders that we are really looking at broad support from the people who elected us.
You're a scientist. What does that bring? What would that bring to the office of governor?
Yeah, understanding the scientific language, I think, is very important. And whether we're talking about our infrastructure or we're talking about managing our natural resources, we need to understand the research that is behind what we're seeing happening. So I would like to make sure that our policies are reflecting scientific reasoning and really understanding that, for example, with our natural resources, we're going to see some changes coming in the next 10 years. We're already seeing them now with precipitation patterns and temperatures, water temperatures. And I want to use that information to make sound policy decisions, as well as looking at what kind of businesses we want to support, what kind of industries we want to really invest in going forward, too. I'm a big fan of alternative energy. I would love to see more solar energy developed here. That's a wonderful industry that has a lot of good jobs to offer. We could do that here in Wisconsin. Same thing with wind. And let's move away from coal. We don't need, you know, coal is one of the worst polluting industries on the planet. That's how we're generating our power right now, is with coal. It's very expensive. It's very polluting. It's not good for our air quality. Let's move toward renewable and clean energy.
Well, let's look at your top priorities, one of which is cleaning up rivers and lakes and restoring local control in creating shoreline regulation. Where would you start on this if you're elected?
Right. So the state right now is basically overruling counties when it comes to managing their shorelines. For example, in keeping buffer zones around lake shores and rivers. So when you plant grass, all the way, a grass lawn, all the way up to the edge of a lake, that when it rains, that that lawn is really not too much different from pavement. Water runs right over it into the lake and carries with it any chemicals from, you know, salt from the roads or any chemicals you might have put on that lawn to look at, make it look nice and green and beautiful. What we want to do, what most counties had in place, is our buffer zones where you put native plants around the shoreline. That slows the water down, allows it to soak in so the soil can do its magic with all the microbial life in the soil, clean up that water before it gets into the lake. And that's so important because we don't want to see toxic algae blooms. And that is caused by not having enough of a buffer zone around our waterways. And we see that in Madison with beach closures. We see that in our riverways. And that's a heavy impact on the life in our waterways. And of course, you know, we have a multi-billion-dollar tourist industry here. That is our water. We have to protect that, not just for our own health and survival, but also for our tourism industry. And it's one of the main reasons we want to live in Wisconsin. We are water rich here, so let's take care of it.
We're talking with Maggie Turnbull, independent candidate for governor of the state of Wisconsin. Maggie, let's turn to education. You have adequate school funding listed as one of your priorities. What would you do when it comes to funding our schools?
We'd look at the funding formula. So right now, I think it's, you know, it's well known that kids in inner city schools and in rural areas aren't worth the same amount when it comes to state funding as kids in growing, more affluent suburban areas. So that funding formula has not been looked at since the 90s. There is a commission, a Blue Ribbon Commission, that has convened over the last couple years, taken input from a lot of different stakeholders, not released its results yet. I guess they're done with their report, but they're not going to report out until after the election. But we want to look at the results of that report. We want to see, you know, were the right people involved in weighing in? I'm not sure there was enough input from teachers and families into that, but that's one part of it. Also,
okay.
Vouchers. We have to move away from vouchers, except where it's really needed in the inner city areas.
We're talking with independent candidate Maggie Turnbull. She stays with us, and we have a line for you. What's the top issue you think the next governor of Wisconsin needs to tackle? What issues and what questions do you have for Maggie Turnbull? 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In this installment of our series of interviews with Wisconsin candidates for governor, we speak with Maggie Turnbull, the independent candidate who's running against Libertarian Phil Anderson, Wisconsin Party candidate Arnie Enns, Democrat Tony Evers, Green Party candidate Michael J. White, and Republican incumbent Scott Walker. What's the top issue that you want the next governor to tackle after the election? What questions do you have for Maggie Turnbull? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Maggie, according to an audit of the State Department of Transportation, last year about a third of Wisconsin state highways were in fair, poor, or worse condition than in 2015, and a report from transportation research group TRIP released last month showed that half of major locally and state-maintained roads and highways in the state rate as poor or mediocre. What do you see as solutions for repairing and investing in Wisconsin's roads?
Yeah, there's not going to be a magic solution here. So Wisconsin has more paved roads than almost any other state in the union, amazingly, surprisingly, because our population is pretty spread out through the state. We have a lot of rural highways, and we also live in a zone, in a climate zone, that is going through a freeze-thaw every year, and that's really hard on the roads. We also made a decision to not take federal funding for a train system that would have relieved a lot of pressure on our highways. So now we're stuck with all of our traffic traveling on highways, and so here we are. And counties are finding themselves making tough decisions about roads, and some of their roads are going back to gravel. And we can't just keep kicking the can down the road. I mean, what I would like to see us do, we're going to have to just prioritize with the resources we have. There's been talk about going to a tollway, maybe in certain areas. I think we should look at that. I'm very leery of it because of my own personal experience with the Illinois tollway, and that would be just the worst thing ever if we ended up with a system like that in Wisconsin. But maybe there are stretches of highway where that would be appropriate to raise revenue. But within the resources that we have, there's not a magic answer here. We're just going to have to prioritize what are the highway projects that are affecting the most people and represent the most danger. It may well be that we don't need as many miles of paved roads as we currently have in Wisconsin. You know, maybe that sounds crazy to people, but are there areas where we could return to a permeable surface roadway, and that would be acceptable? I mean, it is possible to have nice gravel roads. That's not the preference, but we're going to have to look at all options.
What about the gas tax? Would you be open to raising it?
I'd be open to that. I think it makes sense. You know, the ones who are using the roads should be the ones who are paving it. But again, we don't want to put a burden on people who are, you know, we live in a car-based society. We've made that decision that we're not fielding a train that will relieve that pressure and allow people to get from A to B more easily without vehicles. But since we're in that situation now, we know everybody has to buy gas in order to get anywhere. So a gas tax would heavily impact everybody. I'm not opposed to it necessarily because we're the users, we should pay for it. But if there is a way for us to move toward alternative transportation and revisit the idea of a train system that would not only provide a lot of jobs, but relieve some of the pressure on our roadways, I really want to pursue that.
Let's take a call. Michael joins us from Green Bay this morning. Michael, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I know that as a graduate of the UW system, how important it is to our state. And it's unique in a lot of ways. And I just want to know what you're willing to do going forward to protect that system, invest in it, and make sure that people from out of state want to come and invest their education here.
Right. I am also a UW alum. I went to Madison for my undergrad, and now I'm living in Madison again and collaborating with people on campus. And I agree with you that our UW system is a shining light in the nation, and we do have to protect it. I think that the Board of Regents should be comprised of people who have a very strong educational background working in the educational industry and who cherish the UW system, like you and I do. So that's an important part of the equation. I think that faculty members should be valued and treated respectfully, that when they jump through all the hoops we ask them to jump through so that they can have job security, that is there for them. Tenure is important. And in terms of, you know, tuition, we want to keep trying to keep tuition low. Word on the street is that student loans are, relative to the rest of the nation, you know, pretty reasonable, but still, you know, we're talking by the time we graduate of having $30,000 to $40,000 of student debt. So we want to make sure that people are not getting themselves in a situation with our university where the cost of going to school then is a major burden on their lives later when they're trying to work and make ends meet.
Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Bianca in Cornell. Bianca, welcome to the morning show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just wanted to phone in. I've been listening on my way into work and listening to everything that you're saying. Sounds great. I love hearing that you've got kind of a science background. So my question comes from cannabis legalization and any sort of scientific research that you've looked into on that to kind of formulate your opinion on that. I would love to hear your stance on medicinal and, you know, even recreational.
Sure. I'm really in favor of legalizing and decriminalizing cannabis for both medicinal and recreational use. I've researched a lot into cannabis the last couple of years, and I like what we're seeing from the state of Washington and Oregon and Colorado, where they've legalized it, they regulate it, it's taxed, it's sold through dispensaries that are very organized, and you know, you can't just walk in there. You go through a couple layers of security before you're in, and then you work with somebody when you're in to learn about the products and understand exactly what you're buying. But for medicinal use, especially, I think, you know, a lot of people are dealing with pain, whether they're veterans or have other chronic issues. And cannabis is not considered addictive or highly addictive substance. In fact, lab experiments on rats show that it's not, you know, they don't seek it out. They if they're exposed to THC in high doses, they will go through withdrawal symptoms, but they don't seek it out the way they do with opioids and other narcotics. So if we can legalize cannabis, create an orderly industry, generate revenue through taxes, and use that revenue to treat, for example, the opioid crisis, I think that's what we need to be going after.
Well, you mentioned opiates and heroin, methamphetamine. These all pose a significant challenge to Wisconsin. What, if elected, would you do to help Wisconsinites when it comes to this issue?
Yeah, well, I would very much push for a rehab program that is focused on that. And again, you know, using a cannabis industry to help fund that, I think, would be an excellent way to go, because it simultaneously provides the revenue and an alternative treatment for it that is not addictive.
We have less than 2 minutes left. Give us your elevator speech about the Foxconn deal. How do you feel about that?
I think it's not wise for states to put so much money into one basket like that. We're overriding our environmental regulations for them. We're investing billions of taxpayer dollars into this. And this is an industry that is producing products that don't they're not down the line. They're basically just disposable electronics, you know, things that are going to be obsolete within just a few years and end up in landfills. And what if we were investing that kind of resource into renewable energy industries or solar power? What if we were taking that kind of money and putting it toward a future that would employ people for a long time and create energy independence in the state of Wisconsin? We could be leaders, but instead we're kind of selling out to this big foreign company that's going to come in here, and we don't know what we're going to get for it. And we also are talking about taking jobs, you know, we're already at near full employment. And so the people who work there are going to come from other businesses. It's very possible that we'll be driving local businesses out of business just by taking the workforce away from them.
Okay. Maggie Turnbull, thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Maggie Turnbull is the independent candidate for governor of Wisconsin. She's also an astronomer, independent contractor, and small business owner. Visit wisconsinvote.org to hear all of our candidate interviews. Wisconsin Public Radio invited every statewide candidate and everyone running for Congress to talk with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up next, we look at efforts to achieve menstrual equality in Milwaukee. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A recent proposal by the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors would require menstrual products be freely available in the restrooms of two Milwaukee County buildings. If the proposal passes, it would be a success for the menstrual equity movement. We'll talk about what prompted the proposal, why there is a need for this action, and what the menstrual equity movement is. Have you heard of the menstrual equity movement? What are your thoughts? Should menstrual products be made freely available like other hygiene products? Why or why not? Are you a person who has had trouble getting access to menstrual products? Tell us your story. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Marina Dmitrievich is serving on the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors. Her recent proposal would require menstrual products be freely available in two Milwaukee County building restrooms. Welcome, Marina.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Jan Wilberg is the founder of the Time of the Month Club, an organization that collects menstrual products for homeless people in Milwaukee. She joins us from our Milwaukee studios. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning.
Marina, let's start with you. Why did you propose that the Courthouse and Human Services Center in Milwaukee County be required to provide menstrual products in the restrooms?
Well, those are our two most populated buildings. They're very busy. They see thousands of visitors every day, and that's part of being the largest county in the state of Wisconsin. Part of my reason was for us to have conversations like we're having right now, to talk about female menstruation. And the other part of it is that I do believe in menstrual equity, meaning that feminine hygiene products should be readily available to everyone, just as we provide paper towels, soap, and other things.
And Marina, is this an issue that's been brought up in other cities? Is this happening elsewhere?
Yes. So we're actually a little bit behind the curve. Sometimes that happens. But New York in 2016 made our hygiene products available in schools, shelters, as well as jail facilities. So it's been a national discussion. First Lady Obama has spoken about it, and I hope this raises extra concern.
Would having products available for purchase suffice, Marina?
No, I don't believe so. We don't make people of the other gender pay for paper towels or soap, unless you've seen that. I think it should be dealt with in the same way as any other product available in certainly public restrooms, and I hope businesses will follow.
Jan, talk to us about the menstrual equity movement. What does menstrual equity mean?
Well, fundamentally, menstrual equity is about gender equity. And if there are factors in a woman's life that keeps her from fully participating in civic and social life, like menstruation, then gender equity is not possible. So when we're talking about menstrual equity, we're really talking about removing a barrier to full participation in social, economic, civic life. And depending on who you are, this is a smaller or a larger barrier. But for many people, it's a very big deal.
Give us some examples of the inequalities that we see currently surrounding periods.
Well, there are a couple of really good examples, but one that is very distressing is we know that there are teenage girls who don't go to school because they don't have menstrual supplies. That's a problem that could be easily solved by having free supplies at school. And the city of New York has figured that out, that if you want to deal with attendance issues, this is one really good strategy to make sure that girls are not staying home because of their periods. I work with women who are homeless, and there have been many cases that people tell me, you know, I can't go to that job interview, or I can't do this or that because I don't have protection. So it's a barrier. It holds women back. And I think when we're talking about menstrual equity, we're talking about the removal of barriers so people really have an opportunity to have an equal shot at a decent life.
And Jen, menstrual products are sometimes taxed as a luxury item, whereas things like right. groceries or medicine are taxed as necessities. This has been nicknamed the tampon tax. How does that factor into menstrual equity?
Well, I think it's important because it's very symbolic. I mean, there's financial consequences, obviously, to having to pay a tax on a product that really, you know, isn't warranted. But I also think that it's symptomatic of an attitude toward women and menstruation, and it sort of signifies the stigma and taboo. I mean, it's as if we're talking about providing free lipsticks to people. We're talking about providing something that is a basic hygiene item, and it's curious that it would be taxed. But, you know, there are several states that have taken measures to remove that tax, Minnesota, New York, Illinois. So I think that gradually state legislatures are starting to get it, that it just doesn't make sense to tax a product that people need for basic hygiene.
Marina, should we be thinking about these products as a luxury?
No, absolutely not. Again, I have to remind everyone, we don't think about paper towels or soap or toilet paper that way. It's just a normal hygiene product that should be available to the maximum amount of people so we can go about our business. And again, that's, as Jan said perfectly, it becomes a gender issue or barrier. And part of government's work is to remove barriers so everyone has an equal opportunity to succeed.
So, Marina, what needs to happen in order to make your proposal a reality?
Well, we're just steps away. It was unanimously approved at the budget committee. Monday, the full county board will approve it, hopefully. And the county executive has already said publicly that he'll sign it. So there's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm, and it's just the beginning. We started with the two buildings to kind of provide a pilot, but it is my goal to have it in as many buildings as possible. And I do want to take a serious look at our correctional facilities because there's a whole different type of kind of issue there with commodities and how people are treated. So we're on the way to something big, and we certainly have forced the conversation.
And how would the products be paid for?
We're going to use our normal, our normal tax levy that we pay for any services. It's the same way that we pay for the soap, the paper towels, and anything else, the toilet paper. So the same budget that comes out of and that we supply countywide. This would be included as a commodity, and that gets us a little bit closer to the equity that we're seeking.
So what do you say to men who say, well, why should I have to pay for this?
My first response is I've been paying for your toilet paper and soap for a while. But seriously, I want to use it as a moment of learning and discussion. We want to welcome people into the discussion. Most men that I've talked to about it have said, wow, I never realized that menstruation could actually not be as timely as society somehow, you know, discusses it, that you could be unprepared. So a male is not necessarily unprepared with soap or toilet paper or those products, but a woman is somehow forced to buy the expensive tampons or pads and carry them around all the time because, again, menstruation is a wonderful thing in the female body. It's very healthy, but it isn't always to the date or time. So we have to carry that stuff around. It'd be nice to not have to worry about it.
Marina, do you see this growing to include all public buildings in Milwaukee County?
That would certainly be wonderful. I've had an outpouring of support. I've even spoken to some private facilities. I would like it to just be a basic thing, so easy and normal that we're all used to it. And I think that would really help women thrive and succeed and not have to have another worry. I mean, we're already mothers and providers and sisters and hard workers. We're such an important part of our economy. And I think this also exemplifies why it's important to have women in elected leadership decision-making places, because I think that had I not brought this forward, I'm not sure that it would have made its way. So we do need to be at the table to make sure that we're discussing these important items.
And do you think, Jan, let me ask you, what's your take on providing menstrual products in public schools?
I think they're an absolute necessity. I think in most schools now, if a girl goes to the school nurse, she can probably get a tampon or pad. But that becomes sort of like a special, you know, she has to make a request. She has to, you know, it's not sort of like just an ordinary thing. And I think having those supplies right in the bathroom just makes everything less stigmatized and easier for her. So she can just go on about her day. I think it's a really fundamental thing, but you know, whether it's county buildings or public schools or private businesses, this is the beginning of really a shift in attitudes about not only about menstruation, but about women. And large public facilities, you know, half their customers typically are women. And if you start thinking about, is this good customer service to inconvenience women or to make their experience in your facility one that is equal to how men are treated? But I think someone had to be first, and I think Marina took this step and is bringing, you know, Milwaukee County government's a significant entity, right? Their example is going to help the public schools say, yeah, this really is the right thing to do, and the city of Milwaukee, and maybe we have the Milwaukee Brewers or the Bucks, and you know we start to change the attitude toward sort of women and menstruation, and it would be a terrific thing.
Marina Dmitrievich serves on the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors. Her recent proposal would require menstrual products be freely available in two Milwaukee County building restrooms. Jan Wilberg is the founder of the Time of the Month Club, an organization that collects menstrual products for homeless people in Milwaukee. They stay with us as our discussion continues. Want to hear from you this morning. Have you heard of the menstrual equity movement? What are your thoughts? Should menstrual products be made freely available like other hygiene products? Why or why not? Are you a person who has had trouble getting access to menstrual products? Tell us your story. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email address is ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. I'm John Munson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're talking about menstrual equity on this edition of the morning show. A recent proposal by the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors would require menstrual products be freely available in the restrooms of two Milwaukee County buildings. If the proposal passes, it would be a success for the menstrual equity movement. We're talking about what prompted the proposal, why there's a need for this action, and what the menstrual equity movement is. We'd like to hear from you. Have you heard of the menstrual equity movement, and what are your thoughts? Should menstrual products be made freely available like other hygiene products? Why or why not? Are you a person who's had trouble getting access to menstrual products? Tell us your story. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Marina Dmitrievich serves on the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors. Her recent proposal would require menstrual products be freely available in two Milwaukee County building restrooms. Jan Wilberg is the founder of the Time of the Month Club, an organization that collects menstrual products for homeless people in Milwaukee, and she joins us from our Milwaukee studios. Marina, let's talk about the taboos that still exist around menstruation. How does this impact access to products?
It's a big issue. Already in these past couple weeks, I've had some interesting conversations, whether it be with male colleagues or, and it wasn't just males, but it's been predominantly males, even some that were slightly older than me in age, and I think it was just an interesting conversation to have. And again, the biggest thing was I felt that there was a lack of understanding around menstruation, the timing, how one could be unprepared. A colleague on the county board during the hearing actually asked, well, how would we regulate this? Like, you know, would people just grab too many? And I'm like, well, that's an interesting question. I don't know that there's really a market on the street to sell these things, but it goes back to that kind of lack of understanding. So I think the more that we have conversations, and it's for many things that are women-specific, our needs, you know, whether it be breastfeeding, I've done some work on that. We need to keep talking about how women can fully participate and succeed in our society. So it still has been a bit of an awkward conversation, not for me because I'm, you know, living with it every day, but I'm really glad we're having the time to talk about it.
As a married man and the father of a daughter, I have made menstrual product deliveries to schools on many occasions. Mm-hmm. So this isn't awkward for me at all. Let's take a phone call. Chris is with us in Adams. Chris, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. I wanted to talk about accessibility also in the fact that a lot of poor people rely upon their food share. And we live in a city where a governor has completely gutted that, but you are not allowed to buy any kind of hygiene stuff. I can't buy dish soap on my food share, much less toilet paper. And the other thing is that a lot of us also rely on food pantries. And because of the stigma involved, you sometimes will get some paper towels or some toilet paper at a food pantry, but they will not distribute menstrual products. And so for poor people, this is really an issue because you can't get it. You can go into a grocery store and buy a whole cart full of cookies and ice cream and potato chips, but you can't get dish soap or menstrual products. So that's my rant for the day. Thank you.
Thanks for that call, Chris. Jan Wilberg, this one seems right up your alley.
I am so glad that you raised that issue, Chris. That's really important to surface that limitation on food share. And I knew about it, but I hadn't really thought about it that way. And the food pantry angle, I'd really not thought of. One of the issues is that tampons and pads are very rarely donated. That's why I started Time of the Month Club, because emergency shelters and people who work on the street with homeless people, I mean, there were just no donations and there was no money to go buy the product. So they would have to say no to people. So, I think it's really a critical policy issue that we need to look at in terms of food share.
Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Nancy, who's calling from Milwaukee. Nancy, go ahead.
Good morning to you. First of all, I would like to say that I do believe that this is a product that should certainly not be taxed in any way. But I can see a whole lot of other ramifications starting, and that would be that men would say, yes, but you don't have to wear a jock strap, therefore I should be able to have free jock straps. And then women would say, yes, but you don't have to wear makeup, and therefore I can't go to this job interview unless somebody supplies me with free makeup. And then men would say, yes, but you don't have to shave, and therefore I should have shaving products available free of charge. You know, this could be taken to untold places. Please give me some comments on that.
Nancy, thank you. Nancy, thanks. We're on a slippery slope here. Marina?
Well, I appreciate Nancy's concern. I feel that we're so far behind on this specific equity issue. The fact that we're one of the first governments in the state of Wisconsin to even have feminine hygiene products available you know, the other things that Nancy was speaking about, we'll address everyone as they come about. But for so long, for many years, the hygiene products have been readily available to everyone, but feminine hygiene hasn't. So I'd like to get started. Let's get some equity going. And the other items that you suggest, I mean, I think it's an interesting time in our culture and society if we're talking about how we can help more and more people, and we can help more and more people to have access to the items that they might be seeking to succeed. So I'm willing to have that conversation, but I want to start with menstrual equity.
Nancy, thanks for that call. Let's go to Duluth next, and Wendy joins us there. Wendy, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, this is fantastic. It never even occurred to me, and I thank you for the idea. I want to add a suggestion maybe for school use, and that is that all of us as mothers have had to go buy 4 boxes of Kleenex every fall for the list of things that are needed at the in the classroom. Why not add a box of tampons or a box of pads onto that shopping list that get used for the schools as general use? And also, maybe Kimberly Clark or some of those other companies should, you know, give a little grant money towards this. Kudos to you ladies. What a great thing.
Wendy, thanks for that call. Jan, do you want to start on this one?
Both of those are really terrific ideas. It's, you know, it's all about sort of changing our attitude and expanding our consciousness about what's needed. I think those are great ideas.
How can we have more honest and open conversations about this topic? Marina, we'll go to you first and then Jan.
Well, I want to thank you all for hosting this conversation and investing time in it. This is powerful and exceptional itself. They're the one-on-one conversations that are powerful. You know, Jan's work with the Time of the Month Club, we've been partnering at the county for years. Jan addressed the county board, and we have a bin for donations in our lobby. So when you walk in the county board door, you are seeing boxes of pads and tampons, and I think that starts the perception and discussion right away.
And Jan, I want to hear you on this as well.
Well, my experience is with the homeless population, and opening up that discussion there has been kind of challenging because people haven't really thought about it at all. But you just begin, and you show up, and you raise the issue, and you provide a resource. And gradually, people's understanding expands. And I think that's what you're doing this morning, is you're having this conversation. So it's, you know, one step at a time. Marina's resolution, I think, really put this issue on the table, and that it was supported unanimously by the Finance Committee really is a testament to those elected officials being open to dealing with this gender and menstrual equity issue. So it's, you know, you just begin and you open the door, and then I think it takes off from there.
And we're almost out of time. Jan, where can people go if they want to get involved with the Time of the Month Club?
Well, they can find us on Facebook at Time of the Month Club, and also we have website, timeofthemonthclub.org, and we welcome everyone to participate. We always need help. It is, after all, an ongoing need.
Jan, Marina, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this really important topic this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Jan Wilberg, founder of the Time of the Month Club, an organization that collects menstrual products for homeless people in Milwaukee, and she joined us from our Milwaukee studios. Marina Dmitrievich serves in the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors and recently proposed requiring menstrual products be freely available in 2 Milwaukee County building restrooms. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.